Time for the latest world sport from the BBC Now with Aaron Armstrong. Coming up, a good start for Australia's second innings against Pakistan. The wickets continue to tumble on a dramatic day in Cape Town.
Cook has fended this away and has caught it mid-wicket. Prince takes the catch and away goes Alistair Cook, the tamest of tame dismissals really.
In goes Callis, bowls, that'll be four, is it? Oh, he's caught at backward point. What happened? He's still standing there, he looks towards the heavens.
And we hear from Maria Sharapova as she outlines her hopes for 2010. But let's start in Sydney, where Australia are fighting back on the third day of the second test against Pakistan. The tourists resumed on 331 for 9, but added just 2 runs before their last wicket fell to take a first innings lead of 206. Australia, though, have made good inroads to that lead. The latest from Jim Maxwell.
They've got past the half century here, although there was one fortunate moment for Shane Watson when he got a short ball from Umar Gul and he tugged it behind square and it flew off the edge high towards Dennis Kinnear, who's come into this game with an injured finger, and he seemed to be favouring it as he didn't commit himself and the ball went through his fingers and over the boundary for 6. There have been a few plays and misses, but these two batsmen are applying themselves with a great application to try and knock a hole in this deficit of 206. It's none for 51 at the moment. Hughes is 10 and Watson 37.
Thank you, Jim. More from Jim Maxwell in our later bulletins. Now let's turn to Cape Town, where 11 wickets fell on a dramatic second day in the third test between South Africa and England. The hosts are bowled out for 291, but then fought back with early wickets of their own. England finished the day on 241 for 7, still 50 behind. The story of the day comes from the BBC's cricket correspondent, Jonathan Agnew.
Injudicious strokes were largely to blame for the 11 wickets that fell in what appeared to be perfect batting conditions. England struck dramatically in the morning, claiming the last 4 wickets for only 12 runs, including the overnight centurion Callis to his first ball. But England's celebrations were short-lived as Strauss fell on the first over of their reply. Trott, 20, and Peterson, a second ball duck, also played unnecessarily loose strokes. And the most responsible innings came from Cook, who scored 65, and Bell, who battled away for 3 hours for his 48. Prior lifted the tempo and he'll resume on 52, with England needing 50 to draw level with South Africa and exert pressure on their second innings.
So a day when wickets fell in clusters for both sides, and England's top scorer Alistair Cook says the pitch made the batsmen work hard for their runs.
For periods of the game, not much seems to happen. It's obviously quite slow, so it's hard to hit through the line, you know, through the ball for big booming drives. It's a matter of just accumulating runs when you can. But I think, you know, South Africa bowled very well today and put us under some pressure and probably caused a few soft dismissals.
Would you include yours?
When you get 50, 60, 70, you want to carry on and, you know, you score the 100, which, you know, sets the game up. And obviously, yeah, it was a soft dismissal. It was one of my shots and kind of the lack of pace probably did me a little bit. But, you know, it's obviously frustrating after I did all the hard work.
On to football, and Manchester City's new manager Roberto Mancini is expected to spend more of the club's newfound wealth in the January transfer window as he bids to strengthen the squad. City face Manchester United in the first leg of their League Cup semi-final on Wednesday, and the Italian says he's confident of attracting the world's biggest stars to the club.
All the players now want to go to the Manchester City. this is normal because City is a big club and it will be a big future, but after the derby we can talk with the club and we will see.
Arsene Wenger's confident of finding players in the January transfer window that will give Arsenal the best chance of ending their 5-year trophy drought. The Gunners, who will be just a point behind the Premier League leaders Chelsea with victory against Bolton on Wednesday, and face the Portuguese champions Porto for a place in the quarter-finals of the Champions League next month. But Wenger knows he'll need to strengthen the squad.
We're still short in numbers, you know. It's never the easiest months. Generally, it's always difficult to find the right people. In January, it's even more difficult.
Are you confident you'll find the right person? Are you close? Are you near anybody?
No.
You're not confident?
No, I'm confident, but no near anybody.
Some good news for Wenger, though. Arsenal's Czech Republic international midfielder Tomáš Rosický signed a new deal with the club. Rosický becomes the 15th player to sign a new contract at Arsenal since May last year. Burnley have confirmed their manager Owen Coyle's held discussions with rivals Bolton Wanderers over their vacant managerial position, but no decision will be made regarding his future until late on Tuesday. Coyle, a former Bolton player himself, has been widely tipped to replace Gary Megson, who was sacked last week. Now this week we're continuing our build-up to the Africa Cup of Nations in Angola, looking at the prospects of all the countries. And despite the absence of some big names such as Stephen Appiah and John Mensah through injury, Ghana are expected to be a big threat. Here's Sir Richard Fleming with his views on how the Black Stars might fare.
The BBC puts the Africa Cup of Nations in your hands. Profile Ghana.
Ghana were previous hosts of the Cup of Nations, finishing third in 2008. This represented their best finish since claiming the last of their four titles 26 years earlier. Hopes were high as hosts, and don't assume that'll alter in 2010, though they do find themselves in Group B with Ivory Coast, Togo and Burkina Faso. Ghana FA President Kwesi Nantachi told the BBC that it deserved its tag of the Group of Death.
There is no better description than describing it as the Group of Death. This is the group of Ghana, Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso and Togo. We are all neighbors. In fact, Ghana is in the middle. Ghana is surrounded by all these countries. And so we are the king of the group.
So labelled the Group of Death due to it housing three of Africa's five representatives from the last World Cup, the group is given additional spice because of the history and the borders these nations share.
Essien from long range! What a tremendous goal from Michael Essien! 35 yards out, and when Michael Essien does that, you know Chelsea are on form. 3-0.
The nucleus of the Ghana team from 2 years ago remains. They've since qualified for a second successive World Cup finals, as have Ivory Coast. While Togo and Burkina Faso are also strong, and defender John Pansel suggests there's a champion within Group B.
Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo and Burkina, they're all good, and it's a very, very tricky group for us. So I think the two teams that will qualify from this group, one of us will pick up the trophy.
Only two teams have appeared at more Africa Cup of Nations than Ghana, Egypt and Ivory Coast. This is Ghana's best team in a generation. And with the youngsters having won the Under-20 World Cup in October, it appears Ghana should be continental contenders for some time to come.
Africa. The BBC puts the Africa Cup of Nations in your hands.
The Russian tennis star Maria Sharapova, who missed nearly 10 months last year through injury, says it will be tough to return to the top of the women's game. The former Wimbledon champion is currently in Hong Kong, where she and Venus Williams are playing in an exhibition tournament as a warm-up to the Australian Open. And Sharapova was severely debilitated by her shoulder problems in 2009, but is now fit and looking forward to an injury-free year.
Yeah, I think I did a pretty good job of coming back, and you know, once you go through something like that where you're out of the game for a very long time, for 9 or 10 months, you realize how fortunate you are to be back and doing what you love on a daily basis and waking up and, you know, putting your tennis attire on and going and practicing and doing something for a living that you enjoy doing. So very fortunate to be back. I'm, you know, looking forward to a good and healthy new year. And, you know, as things will turn out, they will. And if they don't, they won't. I'm very proud of the things that I've achieved in my career already.
Maria Sharapova there. Some more tennis news. Another former world number one, Justine Henin, is being tipped to claim her 8th Grand Slam title. The Belgian, playing in the Brisbane International Tournament, beat the second seed Nadia Petrova 7-5, 7-5 in her first official tour match since retiring 20 months ago. Since coming out of retirement 20 months ago. Before we go then, a reminder of the latest score in the second test between Australia and Pakistan in Sydney. The hosts are now 56 without loss in their second innings. That's trailing Pakistan by 150 runs. That's the latest world sport from the BBC.